You're listening to Live Law, real stories about the law told live. I'm Nancy Mullane. This week's story is from Joanne Solomon. Joanne is a writer and performer from Brooklyn. If you ever saw the off-Broadway show De La Guarda in New York, you might have seen Joanne. She was the one running up the wall, perpendicular to the ground. But even for somebody who can defy gravity, New York living can be tough. What happens when you've had the same landlord for 20 years? She's like a mother to you. And then you get her all tangled up in something really bad, something criminal. Here's Joanne.
I have always been deathly afraid of my landlord, Maria Piazza. When I moved into the building, I had a party. It was when I was 21. And I stayed in that apartment for 20 years. It was literally this size. The week I moved in, I had a party with my best friend and two gentlemen that I had met at the bar. And she knocked on my door the next day really loudly and was like, Joanna, did you have people over last night? And my best friend that I grew up with says, lie. And so I said, no. And there's silence, and then she walks away, and she doesn't speak to me for 3 more months. She left passive-aggressive notes. I'd go to pay my rent. She'd take it out of my hand and turn her back to me. And so finally, when I went to pay my 4th month rent, I handed her the check, and I say, look, I'm sorry. I lied about having people over. I was scared. And she said, Joanna, there's only one buzzer on the building. They're buzzing the buzzer saying, is Joanna here? Is Joanna here? What do you think, I'm stupid? Never lie to me again. And that's sort of how it went for the next 20 years. She was a little bit of a racist. She trained her dogs, Brando and Diego, to bark at anybody that wasn't white. She was not a big fan of the gays either. If I suggested a friend move into the building, she would say, is he a gay? Is he a gay? It took me 15 years to tell her that my brother was gay and that the question was offensive to me. I think it took 15 years because I deferred to her from the time I moved in. My mom had recently passed away, and she felt like a surrogate family. I became close with her sons and her grandkids. I went to their baptisms. I had a Halloween show every year where I made potions with her grandkids. And I needed that apartment. I needed the safety of home. When I went away to travel, I could always come back there. It was my constant. So I convinced her that I need to go to Argentina to visit my boyfriend's parents. And, I convinced her, I needed to meet them because who knew what my future was. So begrudgingly, she agreed that I could sublet. So I put feelers out, and a friend of a friend knew this woman named Bronwyn, and she was very nice, and I liked her immediately. And I bring her up to my apartment, and I say, look, these are portraits of my mother, and this is my grandmother's rocking chair and my grandfather's ukulele, and please take care of my home. And she was like, oh, absolutely. So I go to Argentina, and I eat so much cow. And I learn how to say cachate instead of callate, and I tango, and I come home, and then Vinny, my landlord's son, knocks on my door, and he says, Joanne, how well do you know your subletter? And I say, pretty well. He said, because while you were away, she moved in with her cat, and she took pictures of your apartment and put it on Craigslist, and she sublet it to 20 people across the country, and she's stolen about $40,000 from people. And I know my mother, and I'm not sure how well she'll take this. You've brought a dangerous person into the building. So I think you should lawyer up. You don't want to be seen as working with Bronwyn. Don't worry, we'll figure this out. So Vinny leaves. I'm totally shaken. There's a pile of mail for Bronwyn on my desk. I tear through it. And there's checks from people all across the country for $2,000. Deposit checks are $2,500. And they're for different parts of the year. I get online and I look her up. I look up her website and I find out that she's not a writer like she had told me, but she's an actress and a pretty successful one. Her career is going much better than mine. She's just been cast in like an independent film. And I am like just this little ball of nerves, like thinking I'm going to lose my home. My brother calls. He gives me the number of a lawyer. I call the lawyer and the lawyer tells me three things. He says, first of all, you have no case. She's stolen nothing from you, so it's these other people that have to report the case. Second of all, you've committed a federal offense by opening up her mail, so keep that news to yourself. And thirdly, after 28 days, she has much right to your apartment as you do. So have a good night's rest, and we'll talk in the morning. So I hang up the phone. I'm completely shaken. I'm like totally freaked out that this woman is going to show up like with her hair dyed and curled, single white female style, and like just move into my apartment with me. I'm like just a nervous wreck. And it's like I'm trying to sleep all night and I can't do it. And I get up and I decide it's like 4:30. I said, I'm like, forget about the lawyer, what the lawyer said. I'm just going to totally ignore it. I can't live with this. And I look on the top of the checks and I spend the whole night investigating, like tracking people down, finding their work numbers. And in the morning I call as many people as I can on the list that I put together and like, hey, it's Joanne Solomon. I'm from New York. And I know you're supposed to move in tomorrow, but I'm the other woman that, and like people across the country were like, it was 17 women and one man, by the way. People were like sobbing, like, I'm supposed to move to New York. I've dreamed about living in New York my whole life. One woman, I was like, don't worry, I have your check. She's like, you don't understand. She called me this morning saying that she had lost the check, but if I wanted the apartment to put money directly into her PayPal account. It was like, just a whole morning of like disappointing people and like destroying their dreams, basically. So I gather the evidence up. I go to work and I gather the evidence and I go to the precinct in the West Village and they're like, the officer's out in Brooklyn solving a real crime. And I was like, okay. They're like, if you want to wait for him, fine, be our guest, but I'd come back tomorrow. But like, it felt like I was ready to admit that I opened the mail and I was like just ready to just like hand over the file I had put together. I waited till 2 a.m. and the officer comes back from Brooklyn and he like looks at me and he knows like exactly who I am. I'm like, I'm the woman with the, you know, with the apartment. He's like, yeah, I got a few calls already. And I realize this is like the girliest case that has come across that precinct. It's like all these women like with their Sex and the City dreams and wanting to buy muffins at Magnolia and like writing morning pages at Grey Dog. And I know that suddenly it like dawns on me like it's not so serious, but you know, it's still my home. I'm still upset. And I say to the police officer, here's the file. And he's like, okay, I got it. I'm like, well, do you want my ID? He was like, not really. And I was like, but I opened the mail. And he's like, you mean the mail that you didn't know was hers because you were running up the stairs when you were opening it? And I was like, yeah, that mail. So I'm on my way home when I get a call from Bronwyn. It's like it rings twice and I don't pick it up. And then I let it go to voicemail the third time. She says, hi, Joanne, it's Bronwyn. Look, I made some really weird assumptions. I thought your boyfriend would ask you to marry you in Argentina, which is like the most implausible thing of this whole story for me. She's like, and look, Joanne, and then her voice cracks. She's like, I just fucked up. I really just fucked up. I'm on a new medication. And if there's any way you could forgive me, I'm so, so sorry. And if you could not go to the police, that would just really, really be helpful to me. And I get off, you know, I hang up the phone and I'm like totally shaken because like there's a few minutes where I believe her. It's like it's humbling to say I fucked up and I feel like she's done the right thing. And then I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, no. Fucked up is like it's like borrowing your brother's car and then crashing that car, which I have done. Fucked up is not like a month-long con man like committing forgery, perjury, fraud, like over an entire month, every day, all day. And I'm like, I'm not calling this woman back. And I go to Queens, I sleep at my brother's house, we watch The Sting, which is like the ultimate grifter movie. And I wake up feeling better. I go back to my apartment, it's morning, I'm sitting on the stairs when Maria walks in. And we haven't talked since this whole thing has gone down. And she looks at me and she says, "Joanna, only you." And I'm like, no, you know, not only me. Like, this could have happened to anybody. I just had some bad luck. And she says, "Well, you're too nice. Joanna, people will take advantage of you." Maria's told me that she cares about me twice in the 20 years I've lived there. The once she screamed out the window, "You're too skinny, eat!" And today when she tells me I'm too nice. My third grade teacher didn't allow us to use the adjective nice because she felt it didn't tell the whole story. And after this whole regrettable debacle, I'm convinced that nice is the gateway adjective. I say to Maria, "Maria, no, I'm not too nice. In fact, I want you to stop. This is bad enough for me already. I want you to stop being mean to me. And just so you know, I'm going to sue Bronwyn for emotional damages." And she walks back to her apartment silently. I think it's the first time I've stood up to her in all these years. And she's heard me speak honestly to her without deference. And she closes the door and then she opens it again and she goes, "Joanna, stop! Good for you! Sue the bitch!" Thank you.
Joanne told her story at a recent Live Law show in Brooklyn. Be sure to check out our sister podcast, Life of the Law, featuring investigative reports on the law in our lives. Next week on Life of the Law.
Not having a lawyer, you're your own advocate. You do the best you possibly can do, but you're going to run into some bias. You're going to run into some prejudices because you're presumed guilty. There's no presumption of innocence in prison disciplinary hearing. You're presumed guilty there.
That's next week on Life of the Law. You can hear our feature reports and our Live Law stories at infiniteguests.org or search for us on your favorite podcast app. Live Law is a production of Life of the Law and is produced by Mary Adkins and Jonathan Hirsch. I'm Nancy Mullane. Thanks for listening.